Hello and welcome to the Fergan. My name is Dan and I'm here to try and make sense of these turbulent times from a heathen perspective. Visit fergan.com for links, information and an archive of past episodes. Hello, you're listening to the Fergan podcast with me, Dan. And in this episode, I'm accompanied by Fiona Adgar. Fiona is a heathen astrologist. And because astrology is an area of esoterica that I personally have almost no knowledge of, I've been keen to get Fiona on so that we can give a sort of beginner's introduction and see how astrology might tie into the Northern European tradition. So Fiona, I know you've been ill recently, and you know, we've had to postpone doing this, but I'm really glad to finally be speaking with you. So welcome, and how are you doing?
Well, thanks, Dan. Yeah, I was pretty ill, but I'm 100% now. So thanks for your patience.
Oh no, my pleasure. I know how it is. You know, there's people have schedules, and obviously when you're as you know, as ill as I gather you've been, it's impossible to do something like this. I know, you
yeah.
know, as I said, we were talking before we started recording, and I was particularly ill last August. It sounds like Fiona and I had a similar kind of level of illness, so yeah, I know what it's like.
yeah thanks. Yeah, well, I'm fine now, that's the main thing.
Yeah, great. So your kind of unique expertise, your unique knowledge is that you are a heathen. You know, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong at any point, but you're a folkish heathen
mm-hmm.
who also has a knowledge of astrology. And I've been following your Telegram channel for a while now and listening to some of your daily broadcasts. But and it does sound to me like you know what you're talking about. But for myself, I mean, I've over the years, you know, the last 20 years or so, I've delved into lots of areas of the occult and esoterica, you know, shamanism and tarot and, you know, things other than, you know, what I've kind of landed on as my my general worldview, which is, you know, Germanic heathenism. And but the one thing that I've never really even made much of an effort to understand is astrology. And I think that I probably speak for some of my audience there. So would you be able to kind of give like a basic introduction as to what astrology is as you see it? You know, how I know it's impossible to kind of answer how it works, because even to people who read the celestial signs, you can, you know, it's like asking how the runes work. You know, it's their energies. They just do, and they always have. So yeah, what in your view, you know, is astrology? How would you explain astrology to a complete beginner?
Okay, the ancient astrologers saw the planets as a reflection of us. Okay, so they thought okay. that when we came into a physical incarnation, that the soul part of us longed so much to kind of rejoin the, you know, the spirit world or the afterlife, that the two began to mirror each other. So our lives were mirrored in the within the planets and the stars. But tropical Western astrology that I use, which is pretty different from Vedic astrology, it's based on the seasons. Okay. So the equinoxes and the solstices and the seasons that we have here in Europe. So it is a kind of, it condenses the energy of those seasons. So someone that was, say, born with the sun in Scorpio would very much reflect that, the energy of that season within their own life.
Right. I mean, that what you said there, that in the, you know, your first kind of opening line there, actually explains a lot, this idea that we as human beings are a reflection of the heavens, the kind of above, as above, so below principle. Is that, does that tie into it, that kind of hermetic principle of as above, so below?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Right. Okay. Well, that already shines quite a big light on it for me. But you mentioned a phrase you mentioned there, and this is kind of central to your readings, is, you know, you'll drop in something like, you know, the moon in Scorpio or the sun in Scorpio. What does that actually mean? Is, you know, if you're able to explain what that actually means.
Sure. So each planet or point in the chart represents a different part of us. So a part of your personality, your ancestry, your past lives, your love life, and also what you kind of the challenges that you have in your life and your luck. So they each represent a different area of life.
Right. Okay. So as the kind of the constellations as they rotate, I guess, or, you know, obviously the Earth rotates, but as the constellations seem to rotate in the skies above us, we're kind of switching from one energy to another, right? Almost like a kind of, well, it's like a clock, really. It's like a great clock in the sky.
Yes, it is like a great clock in the sky. That's a great way to put it. So the Western astrology that I use, it's not actually a star-based system. So the star-based system is what the Vedic astrologers use, and it's called sidereal astrology. But tropical or Western astrology, it divides the sky into different sections. And each one of those sections will represent a different season. So you do hear all of this stuff about, oh, Western astrology isn't accurate. You know, it's out of alignment and all of that. But that's not true, because Western astrology is not a star-based system. It's based on the energy of the seasons.
Okay. All right. That's kind of a curveball. And you sort of preempted a couple of the questions that I had kind of lined up for you, which is, you know, one of the ones I was going to ask is, you know, I've heard about regular versus sidereal astrology, and also Eastern versus Western. So you've already stated that you follow the Western tradition, which is less focused on the stars and more on the seasons, the equinoxes and the solstices, right?
Yeah.
And what about regular versus sidereal? What's the relevance of that, if anything?
The thing is that they are both very accurate, and they come to many of the same conclusions, but using different methods.
Right. So that's the methods rather than the core principles.
Exactly. I mean, the confusion comes because they have the same names. So Cancer and Western obviously has the same name as the constellation, but the energy is different. For example, in sidereal astrology, some of the stars that are within Cancer are said to have the nature of Mars and Saturn. But in tropical Cancer, you don't have Mars and Saturn, because it's the archetype of the mother. It's connected to nurturing and healing and maternal instincts and children. So they're quite different. So you do hear a lot of this stuff. People just don't understand the difference. And I have to say that when I do hear people discrediting Western astrology by saying that it's not accurate, it's usually the people that have no working experience with astrology.
Yeah. Well, that goes for a lot of things, doesn't it? You know, people who, you know, dismiss things like, you know, runic divination and things like that. You know, some people say, oh, well, the runes were only for conveying language and, you know, nothing else. But I think, you know, and at times in the, you know, many years ago, I kind of lent towards that view. But having actually practiced those things, you actually find that, you know, there has to be something to it, because you know, you're finding by your own experience that there's something. And I know that you definitely do find, and this is something I want to get onto later, about your kind of how you live your life. But yeah, absolutely. I think it goes for many things that when you actually engage with something firsthand, with firsthand experience, then you understand it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, so, you know, when you, you know, you say that the Western tradition is not based on so much on the, you know, the constellations. So would you be able to give a kind of example of how you, you know, so like, for example, we're, you know, we've recently passed the equinox in Northern Europe here. So what are you looking for then? What are you, if you're not actually looking, you know, this might seem like a stupid question, but if you're not actually outside looking at the stars to see, you know, what constellations are in which position, what exactly are you looking for? Are you purely looking at a calendar and saying, right, we have, you know, the equinox just passed and we have a solstice coming up at this point. So from that, I can gather that this energy will be most powerful.
Yeah, that's right. So it is a calendar. We know that what I'm looking for mostly are the planets. So in Western astrology, we're focusing mostly on the planets. And they, of course, will have a particular route that they travel through the zodiac. And they don't deviate. We have retrogrades and things like that. But I mean, I can look at the astrology for 50 years from now, and it's going to be accurate. So you can use an ephemeris. It's like a little book, and it will tell you exactly where the planets are for each day. But luckily enough, we do have software now that makes it a bit easier.
Right. So it's like the ancients, because they'd already mapped out these celestial bodies, and they'd already worked out the cycles and the calendar of the kind of, you know, the precession of these things. So now, you know, fast forward to today, we don't actually need to go outside and look at the stars. We can literally look at the dates that we're on and work out the kind of dominant energies based on that.
Yeah, exactly. But I would encourage you to go outside and look at the sky anyway.
Okay.
Because a lot of those objects will be visible in the sky, depending on the weather, of course. But yeah, it kind of, it's a much deeper experience to see them in the sky. Now, of course, the ancient astrologers, they only used the sun up until Saturn, okay? Because the other planets hadn't been discovered yet, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Now, this is another area where I differ from a lot of modern Western astrologers. For example, Saturn, I still see Saturn as the ruler of Aquarius. So somewhere along the lines, a modern astrologer decided to assign Uranus as the ruler of Aquarius. But I'm with the Vedic guys on this one. So yeah, I'm very much all about the way that the ancient Greeks practiced astrology, because that is where Western astrology originated.
Right, I see. Yeah, because when people talk about Western versus Eastern, I wasn't sure if that was kind of, you know, the Vedic plus the classical, the Greek and that, versus, you know, this kind of Western, I guess, Hermetic or pagan tradition. But you're saying that the Western tradition does originate with the Greeks, you know, yeah, despite the Greeks being kind of somewhat culturally close to, the ancient Vedic peoples in geography. You know, I know that the classical Greeks did learn a lot from the East. So the Greeks kind of developed their own system, and that's what kind of spread westward through Europe.
Yes, exactly. The Greek system was much more complex. If you go back to the kind of Mesopotamian astrology, it was a very simple proto-astrology. So they would say that this day was lucky, that day was unfortunate. They kept an eye on the eclipses and things like that. But with Greek astrology, that's where it became much more complex.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that, I must say, it kind of appeals to me, that's that very simplistic way of doing it, because to a beginner like myself, and I don't know if you remember what it was like first getting into it, but it seems so complicated. I'm sure it's not once, you know, it's like anything, you know, once you kind of throw yourself into it and you start practicing it and things, it starts to make sense. But for a beginner like myself, it seems very, it seems like quite a tangled web, you know. There is something kind of attractive about this idea that you can literally boil it down to this day is fortunate and that day is unfortunate, rather than these quite complex readings that we have now. Yeah, I mean, how have you found it kind of getting into it? How long have you been practicing and studying astrology? And, you know, like, do you remember how you felt before you got into it? You know, what is it that attracted you to it? And did you feel any kind of, you know, did you feel like it was quite a kind of uphill climb at the time? Or did it seem to kind of naturally make sense to you?
Oh, well, I've been studying and practicing astrology now for well over 20 years. So I'm 41 now, and I was in my late teens when actually my sister introduced me to it. So I knew all about sun signs, and you see the horoscope astrology in the newspapers, which is really bad astrology and extremely vague and has given astrology a pretty bad reputation over the years.
Yeah.
But my sister had a book, I forget the name, but it told you how to calculate different points in your chart other than the sun sign. So I discovered that I was a moon in Scorpio. And I was like, wow, that's really me. You know, it really resonated. So I started to do my own studying, and it is overwhelming. There's a lot to it. Astrology used to be taught in universities. It's not something that you can learn overnight. But I had such a passion for it because there are just so many things that you can do with it. If you learn astrology, you will use it every day for the rest of your life.
Right. Okay. So, well, in light of that, I'm going to swap around some of my questions, some of my talking points here. And, you know, I listened to your, you know, today is the, what is it? The 13th of October today. And I listened to your Telegram voice note, and you talked about it being a Gemini moon. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah? Okay. So it's a Gemini moon. And you said that means that today is good for communication, but that you might find that you're lacking focus. But it's a good time to concentrate on communicating with loved ones and your spiritual life. So assuming that I've got that correct there. You yourself, presumably you put that into practice, and you have done for the last 20 years. And what sort of benefits have you seen from doing that?
I'm not really, you know, completely religious about it. So if I have something to do, I'm going to do it regardless of where the planets are in the sky. But it can really help, for example, in terms of if Mercury is retrograde, which is a time when things tend to go wrong, there are communication issues and slip-ups, it's best not to sign anything or make very firm agreements or buy anything, because it can turn out differently than you expected.
Right. Yeah. I think this is the kind of area that I'm most interested in, you know, because I'm very much into, you know, with regards to my heathen practice, I'm very much into how we can apply this to our modern lives and make them, you know, rather than kind of treating it as this kind of museum piece and studying paganism as some kind of archaic fascination of the past. I'm very much into bringing these practices into our modern lives. And, you know, I had an incident earlier in the year where, you know, I won't go into detail, but some misfortune befell me. And I, looking back on it now, I realized that I made a big mistake in what I did there. And it was quite out of character for me. And I suspect that if I had been paying attention to the astrology, you know, either listening to someone like yourself or studying it for myself, that I probably wouldn't have made that mistake, because I'd be willing to bet that the decision I made on that day was on a day when, you would probably say, an astrologist like yourself would probably say, don't make any rash decisions on this day because, yeah, you know, whatever is in retrograde or whatever. So, I think that's the area of astrology that can really improve people's lives. And I think it's also a way that a lot more people can become interested in it, because we're all looking for ways to kind of bring more order to our lives, especially in these kind of quite chaotic times. And it feels like we're all kind of stabbing in the dark. We don't know, you know, there are so many decisions to be made, and there's so much turbulence going on in the world that we could really do with some kind of rudder, you know, amidst that storm. And it seems to me like astrology can kind of serve as that rudder.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. It's a great guide. So when we talk about Mercury retrograde and all of that, that's what's kind of happening in the sky at the current time. But you have your own unique birth chart that was a reflection of the sky at the exact moment that you were born. So your birth chart is going to tell you some things about yourself that you may not even be aware of. Okay, so let me explain. The 12th house in astrology, an astrology chart is divided up into little sections, and each section will represent a different part of you. So the 12th house, amongst other things, is known as the house of self-undoing. So it's things that you do that are bad for you. And we all have things that, you know, that we kind of will do that aren't the best, but we're not aware of them. And if an astrologer can examine that part of your chart, it can be immensely helpful. Right. So, for example, it's also the 12th house is also the memory of the blood. And this is where I differ from nearly every Western astrologer out there, is I see the blood and the ancestry as being extremely important, whereas a lot of other astrologers have reduced the chart into psychological archetypes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'd like to kind of get into that area in a minute, actually. But before I do, you say that, you know, on any particular day, we've got a certain, you know, reading of astrology. We've got, you know, the, like today, the Gemini moon or whatever. But then there's the other layer to that is we've got our own personal astrology. So
yes.
Can you explain a little bit how the two interact? You know, does one cancel out the other? Is one more dominant than the other? Or do they always just kind of complement each other?
Well, the most dominant is going to be what's going on with your individual chart.
Okay.
So yeah, we know that you have your birth chart, but of course the planets have moved on since then. They're doing different, they're in different signs in the sky, and they're actually making relationships to the planets that you have in your birth chart. So that is called a transit. So that will be the most dominant thing for you. But the planets in the sky, and when I do my daily astrology updates on my channel, that's the general energy or the general vibe that is affecting everyone.
Right. Okay. So, you know, I think, and this is, I think this is quite an important question that a lot of people probably want me to ask, particularly as, you know, most of the listeners are heathens or pagans. And we have this strong kind of sense of being able to affect our weird, you know, not, you know, a lot of people misunderstand weird as just simply meaning fate or destiny. But actually, in the pagan mindset, you have a huge impact upon your future path, you know, based on your decisions today is how your weird will unfold. So, you know, and I think this is probably the reason that I've always veered away from astrology, is because I don't like this idea that we are these kind of programmed archetypes that have no agency, that, you know, nothing that we do matters, because ultimately our sign at birth and whatever the kind of celestial signs are of the day are going to control our life and our mood on that day. Am I completely wrong there? Would you, you know, like, I'm kind of hoping that you'll tell me that I am. But, you know, how do you see that? You know, because it kind of feels like astrology is so rigid and so set that we're all just these kind of we're all just subject to it, and we have no real kind of agency over our lives. Is that true? Or
I do think that there are certain events that happen in your life that you seem to have not much control over.
Yeah.
Okay. For example, when I was a kid growing up in Northern Ireland, my family was affected by terrorism. And that in itself, I had no control over whatsoever. But I could either become a victim to that and let it affect the rest of my life, or I could make it into a strength. So wow. I decided to make it into a strength over the years. So do I think that we're the victim to our chart? No. I think that you can turn a very hard aspect that you have in your chart into an enormous strength. So
yeah. So the the signs, you know, the celestial bodies, they don't control our will. They control the situations and the kind of the more objective kind of, you know, as some people say, macro environment, but they can't control how we choose to react to those situations. So we still do have a strong sense of agency.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think that they kind of reflect, especially stuff like ancestral karma or trauma or whatever it is that you want to, the way that you want to describe it. And we can work with that. For example, in my own line, there was a history of failed businesses. And that was going away back to my great-grandfather. So I did not want that to happen to me, obviously, being self-employed and having my own business. And this is, again, where I kind of differ from other astrologers. If you go to a Vedic astrologer and you have an aspect in your birth chart that will indicate that you'll have an unhappy marriage or love life, they will actually tell you to go and pray to a certain god or to say a mantra. They will give you a remedy for that. So that's what I do in my own practice.
Mm.
Now, I obviously, I'm a heathen. When I was born, Venus was making a hard aspect to Chiron, which meant that I would have, you know, not so good luck in terms of relationships. But I work with Freya now. I work with Freya a lot. I have an altar for her in my bedroom. And since I did that, I have a really good, healthy relationship. And my love life is thriving. So I think there are certain things that you can do, especially in your magical or your spiritual life, that will make the best out of your chart.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And it's a case of this, you know, it's a case of, well, this is how the situation is going to be. But if you understand the astrology, then you know how to turn it to your advantage.
Yes.
Whereas if you're not aware of the astrology, then you've got these kind of invisible forces working upon your life in a very chaotic manner, and you're unable to make any sense or order of it. So, but knowing the astrology, you're able to kind of carve a path through all of that chaos.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. That's a very kind of attractive proposition, I must say. You're really kind of selling me on it here. and so to kind of move on to the more kind of explicitly heathen aspects of your worldview. So, I was talking to, I've got a private Fergan group with, some of my supporters in there. And, over the last few weeks since we decided to do this conversation, I've been asking them if they've got any things that they want to ask of you. And one of them, a guy from Sweden, mentioned that as far as he knows, and I think he's right here, because I'm not aware of much reference in the Eddas and the sagas to the stars and the planets. So, firstly, were you an astrologist before you were a heathen, or did they come about at roughly the same time? And, did you have any difficulty reconciling astrology with heathenism, or have you actually found that they complement each other in ways which more people should be aware of?
I was an astrologer for much longer. Yeah. Before I became a heathen. Now, I've always been spiritual, but like a lot of people, I got caught up in the New Age before then. So I don't see them as being the same thing. I don't see there's no conflict between them. But astrology to me is more like a soft science.
Yeah.
I don't see that as really, I don't see it as part of my spiritual practice. I see it as a tool in my toolbox that I can use to manage my everyday life and things like that. But I don't see it as the same thing.
It's kind of more material in that sense, isn't it? It's less kind of philosophical in the sense that if you understand it, I guess it's not so much open to personal gnosis. It's more like, it's kind of like mathematics, really, isn't it? I guess,
yes.
There are set rules, and you just need to understand those rules to kind of read the the astrology. Whereas with heathenry and things like that, it's, you know, if you go into meditation and you're trying to connect with a certain god or goddess, then there's no guarantee that you're going to connect in that moment. You know, it's based on, you know, the energy of that day, probably based on what the astrology tells you, as well as, you know, other factors as well. So that's less of a kind of a hard science. Well, as you say, I mean, astrology is a soft science, but it's kind of definite, whereas spiritual practice is less definite. There's less certainty to it, right?
That's exactly right. Yes. And astrology can definitely complement your spiritual practice.
Hmm.
So, for example, you can use your own birth chart as a kind of magical calendar.
Okay.
Now, I am writing a book about that at the moment because nobody in Western astrology, they kind of ignore this part of it. But for example, there's a part in the chart that will rule your ancestry and what you've inherited from your ancestors and so on. So I have Leo on mine, which is ruled by the sun. That would very much indicate that working with a paternal god such as Odin, the masculine energy within my line has been damaged. So forging a very close relationship with Odin has been really beneficial for me.
Right. Yeah. Do you hold the view that, you know, Mercury is Odin or Woden and Venus is Freya? I suppose it's kind of essential if you're a heathen astrologist to make those connections, those kind of cross traditional connections between, you know, the gods as they're named in the Greek and Roman world and as they're named in the Northern Germanic tradition. Because you mentioned earlier that, you know, you were born, I can't remember exactly what you said, but something about Venus. So if you make that connection between Venus and Freya, and you said that you've been working with Freya for many years to improve your kind of love life situation. So yeah, very basic question there, but do you kind of translate, you know, Woden to Mercury and Venus to Freya, and, you know?
I think they're similar, but not the same.
Right,
so that's the crucial difference is that, yes, they do have some things that are alike. For example, Freya, of course, is connected to love and beauty, which Venus in a birth chart would indicate. But Freya is also a battle goddess, goddess of war, which we wouldn't really see Venus in a birth chart as being connected to that. So they do have some similarities, but I don't think that they're the same thing.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So I mean, it's interesting that you say that because it would make reconciling astrology with heathenry much simpler if you did make just a simple direct connection between those, you know, the deities by their different names. So it's interesting that you actually don't quite make that connection, which actually kind of makes things almost a little bit more complicated, but perhaps also opens up more opportunity and more kind of nuance and kind of richness to how you can interact with these energies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just saw that I got a pop-up there in my system tray telling me that the planetary hour had just changed to Venus. Okay, so each hour of the day is ruled by a different planet. So if I had wanted to perform some kind of ritual for Freya, this would be an opportune time to do it because they do have that similarity.
Right. That's fascinating because I think one of the things that, and this is one of the reasons that I started the Fergan podcast to begin with, because there are so many people out there that don't even know how to begin and, you know, with paganism. And when they do begin, much like someone like myself coming to astrology, it's quite daunting to know how to structure your practice, how to kind of do things and in what way to do things and when to do things. But what you just mentioned there, you know, we could almost use astrology to actually create a schedule for ourselves. So we could say, you know, rather than umming and ahhing about when we're going to meditate or when we're going to bloat to a Freya or a Woden or something, we can actually look to the astrology to see when that the connection with that energy or entity is strongest and do it at that time. So again, it seems like the kind of overriding theme of astrology is that it brings order to our mostly chaotic lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned earlier, as you said, that the moon was in Gemini today. Mm. So it's good for communication, but it's not so good for focusing, especially on more monotonous tasks. So if I had to do my housework, for example, I know that today I would struggle to focus on that. So I would wait until the moon was in Virgo or Capricorn, yeah, because they help you to focus on the small details and productivity and getting stuff done. So it is a really good guide and it's a great way to live your life because, well, it just makes things a lot easier.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. And, you know, my understanding of kind of, you know, when you think about these mega wealthy guys, these kind of institutional bankers and investors and guys on Wall Street and stuff, you know, you do hear rumors that a lot of these guys do actually do their financial business by the, you know, by the astrology, and they swear by it. You know, some of these guys, you hear, you know, stories about people like Rockefeller and that who have always sworn by astrology. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but do you think there are people in a lot of people in the world who have really well and truly capitalized on this astrological knowledge and used it to immense advantage over people who don't understand it?
Yes, absolutely. Especially in terms of things like finances and the stock market.
Mm.
So when we had that triple conjunction in Capricorn, there was Saturn, Jupiter, and also Pluto. A lot of astrologers were able to predict that there was going to be something very bad that would happen in terms of the economy and so on. So these guys have always used astrologers. They just don't want us to use it.
Yeah.
Because if you're an astrologer, for example, you can look up someone's birth chart and find out exactly what they're like. Because there's no hiding when it comes to astrology. One of my students and I, we were taking a look at that, the president of Ukraine, his birth chart a few weeks ago, and we were seeing that things were not going well for him at all. Mm. And are continuing to kind of go in a downward spiral for the rest of the year. So we also could see that he was quite a narcissistic person and many other things. So they don't want us to have that ability to look up someone's chart and say, oh, hang on, they have a weak point here. You know, they could be selfish or power hungry. They want us to be ignorant and go by what they tell us on the news and the media.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you are familiar with Thomas Sheridan.
Yes. Thomas is a friend of mine, actually.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I did actually. I contacted him a few months ago to see if he'd be interested in coming on the podcast, but I've not had a reply. So maybe you can put in a good word for me.
Oh, I will. But, yeah.
Great. But, I've followed his work for, well, over 10 years now, since he kind of first appeared on Red Ice Radio talking about Russell Brand a long time ago. But he did a video recently where he, I think it was just in the wake of Elizabeth II's death, or supposed death, because, you know, I suspect that she may actually have been gone for a while, but that's just a pet theory of mine.
Yeah.
And the reason I mention that is because Thomas, he said something in this video where, I think the monarch, the members of the royal family, they, particularly the king or queen, they always have two birthdays. They have their actual birthday and a kind of official birthday. And he said that the reason for that is because they don't actually want anyone knowing the true birthday of the monarch, because precisely for the reasons that you just mentioned, because if someone like yourself who is knowledgeable about astrology, you can read their chart by knowing their true birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, you know, I study this kind of law stuff. And in the same way, it's said that if someone has your name, then they can summon you, you know, mm-hmm. in the sense that they can summon you to court. You can't summon someone to court if you don't know their name, you know. So it seems like these two things, your true name and your true date of birth, are actually kind of almost things that you should be hiding, because if you don't, if they're known, if these things are well known, and you know, it's kind of a bit too late for me, but if these things are known by nefarious people, they can actually use that information against you. Is that, would you say that's true?
Yeah, I definitely would say that that's very true. So it's not going to be really accurate unless they have your actual time of birth. Hmm. The time of birth is very important in astrology. But even if they do put out a fake date of birth, it actually is still possible to predict a lot of their public life based on that chart.
Right. Okay.
For example, their demise, or because that would be the chart that represents their public personality.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. So I do agree with you in what you said about the Queen. And actually, I said that a few years ago, that I thought the Queen had passed, because I was looking at her astrology transits, and she had like an eclipse in a certain place. Pluto and Saturn were doing bad things to her chart, and I was sure that she had passed away.
Right.
So I do agree. I agree with you about that.
That's interesting. I mean, the reason I started to think that she had passed a while ago, because in 2020, the mainstream media, I mean, there was actually an incident where part of the royal seal fell off of the gate of Buckingham Palace, which is a kind of a strange omen. And then there was the mainstream media started putting out news stories about how we wouldn't see the Queen probably until at least 2021 or 2022 because of fears over her catching COVID and stuff like this. And I was thinking, okay, that's kind of an odd thing to be making a big announcement about. And then there were a couple of other little things that happened, and lots of members of the Windsor royal family were moving abroad and things like that. And then when you tie that all into the fact that this year is the Jubilee year.
Yeah.
And when I say Jubilee, I don't just mean the Queen's Jubilee. I mean that also relates to the Hebrew Jubilee, which is every 50 years the land is let to rest and debts are forgiven among kin. And this is something that's written in the Old Testament. So, and apparently, you know, I made a post on my Telegram channel about this, which I think is pretty interesting, because apparently historically in the Jubilee year, there would be a new monarch to forgive the debts. So it just seems far too coincidental that this is the Jubilee year, and it so happens to be the Queen's Jubilee year, and also the day that the year that she supposedly passes away. You know, those kind of things all, you know, conjoining on the same year is a bit too kind of coincidental for me.
Yes.
So yeah, I think we must be on the same page there. But you know, we'll never know for sure. So
yes, yeah, it is a good way to kind of validate that. And we can make predictions for public figures, although it's slightly more difficult than, let's say, if I was doing a reading for you. So the reason is because a lot of astrology is also based on the location, yeah, of where the person is on, for example, their birthday. And with the famous people, we never really know where they are. Mm. So, but we still can use it for that.
Yeah. Okay. So another question, there's a couple of more questions I wanted to ask relating to the kind of heathen astrology crossover. You know, we've talked about how you can kind of work the gods and goddesses into astrological practice. What about the runes? You know, do you work much with the runes, and do you see any kind of correlation between reading the runes or casting the runes and the energies of the runes? Do you see any correlation between that and the signs, you know, the astrological signs?
I see the correlation as in the runes, like the zodiac, where they represent the passage of life and death and everything in between.
Mm.
So, but they're not necessarily connected. However, there is a way to use them at the same time. For example, Freya Aswyn.
Yeah.
Freya Aswyn she will cast runes, and they will place them within certain astrological houses of your birth chart.
Right.
So we can use both together. They're not really connected, except for some things that they represent. But why not use them together?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why not. I actually had the privilege of performing like a private online concert with and Freya Aswin was among the audience, and yeah, it was quite a quite an honor to have her speak so fondly of the music that I played. So yeah, she's great. She's great, Freya. She's
fantastic. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a like a relationship with her or know a huge amount about her, but I know that she's been around for a very long time. She's, you know, always kind of stayed the course and been sharing her knowledge, and for, by all accounts, you know, being quite kind of open and generous with, you know, her understanding of things. So
yeah,
it's good to give her a mention there. Okay so what about numerology? You know, what that's something that kind of traditionally, you know, you know, when you kind of explore these new age topics, you come across astrology, and you come across, you know, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, the horoscopes is your kind of first thing that gets put in front of you, kind of like when you're a teenager and, you know, you get given the Communist Manifesto and then you kind of move beyond that and realize what a load of bullshit it is. But you know, you encounter astrology, and it's quite often tied into numerology and gematria and things like that. Are those areas that you have any interest or understanding of, or do you find them kind of quite irrelevant to your astrology?
I have a kind of basic knowledge about numerology, but it's not necessary to use numerology within astrology, and it doesn't hugely interest me. Although, let's say certain sign or certain degrees of each sign will be more potent than others. Yeah. So, for example, if you have a planet or an angle at 29 degrees, it's said to be the anaretic degree. It's meant to be something hugely significant.
Right.
But regular numerology, I would not really fit into astrology at all. I think they're totally separate systems.
Okay. Yeah, it's good to know. It's just, you know, it's one of those things as a layman, you kind of, you're sort of, you know, taught to think of them as being, you know, intrinsically related to one another. But yeah, I kind of suspected that that wasn't the case. But yeah, it's just good to kind of, you know, as I say, this is trying to serve as kind of a beginner's kind of primer for astrology. So I'm just kind of trying to dispel some of these myths that people who are completely new to it have kind of had built up in their minds, and it's good to kind of, you know, destroy those. So yeah, the last thing I wanted to talk about a bit is kind of what's going on in the world in general. You know, I've seen a couple of your videos where you've talked about the need to prepare. You've talked about, you know, building up a store of food and things like that because of the whole Agenda 21 Great Reset thing that's going on, which is again one of the reasons why the Fergan begun in the you know, in late 2020, is because I needed an outlet to talk about this stuff because it's so important. So with astrology, you know, you've talked about how you can, you know, right down to the hour, you can know what the energies of the time are. But is there a way to do long-term forecasts, you know? And if I'm guessing that the answer is yes. And if so, what do you see kind of over the coming years? Have you done a forecast for, you know, these current times that we're going through and the years ahead?
Yes. Well, to answer your first question, yes, it is possible. I was one of the astrologers that actually predicted the whole COVID crisis.
Oh, right. So okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I actually did that on Unslaved podcast. Now, I didn't know that there was a virus involved, but I predicted that there would be some kind of Orwellian system that would turn the world upside down, and massive changes within the financial and control structure.
Right.
So I have, of course, looked at the astrology. I also predicted the war, the invasion of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know it was going to be Ukraine, but I actually knew that a war would start because the North Node in the sky was conjunct a particularly evil fixed star called Algol. So Algol is said to be the demon's head. It was feared by the ancients. It was connected to war and destruction. So over the next few years, now in 2024, the planet Uranus is going to conjunct Algol.
Okay.
Okay, so Uranus is connected to everything that is anti-nature and sci-fi technologies. It is also connected to nuclear weapons.
Okay.
And yeah. So on. Now, I don't want to be scary, but I believe in telling the truth instead of putting a false kind of new age spin on things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do we go. Yeah, sorry, carry on. Yeah,
I'm just going to say that we do have that and then some other things as well, that it does suggest that the next couple of years is going to be a bit difficult for us.
Right. So is that the main thing you're looking towards at the moment is 2024? So, you know, we're obviously, I think we can all probably agree that 2023 is going to be, you know, a rocky ride. But are you sort of more looking towards 2024 for something particularly big occurring?
Yes. Yes. Right. Okay. That would be something particularly big. Now, next year, we do have Jupiter is in Aries at the moment, but it's going retrograde in the sky and it's going to go back into Pisces. But next year, Jupiter is direct in Aries. So Aries, of course, is the sign of the warrior. It's ruled by Mars, which is the planet of warfare. So we're going to have more conflict. Right. And that's just what we have to expect with that transit.
Yeah. And when you say conflict, I mean, could that be symbolic? Or do you think that that likely means literal, you know, conflict, literal violent war?
Yes, I think that it means more warfare, but it also means more personal conflict,
yeah,
as well within people's personal lives, where we have to kind of if you look at the signs for inspiration, Aries is the warrior, and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't take any crap from anyone. So we have to all try and kind of man up a little bit. But Jupiter and Aries is going to help us with that.
Yeah.
It will dissolve the fear. When Jupiter was in Pisces, there was this terrible fear coming from everyone. And, you know, they were all fearing to go outside and without their masks on, and fear from the government and all of that. But actually, we'll develop more courage next year.
Is that what Jupiter represents? Sorry to interject, but does Jupiter represent courage?
So Jupiter will actually heighten or expand the sign that he's moving through.
Right. Okay.
We'll get more of that.
I see.
So in Aries, we get more war, we get more conflict, but we get more courage.
I see. I'm starting to kind of visualize it now. So as the planets move into the signs, the sign, the kind of the constellation represents the specific kind of event or action that might occur, and the planet represents the energy of that action, you know, whether it's big or small or personal or am I kind of, you know, on target there?
Yes, you are. Exactly.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, then this episode, as far as I'm concerned, has been a success, because I've kind of uncloaked the mysteries as I see them of beginner astrology.
Good. Yes.
So how do you think we should prepare? You know, just as kind of like a final talking point, how do you think we should prepare? You know, you mentioned you think that we're probably looking to something particularly big in 2024, and you said that it's probably going to relate to, you know, anti-nature. So, I mean, could we speculate about that being something like the AI or something like that? Do you think it could be something like that? Or would you not want to speculate on the kind of specifics of it?
Well, it could be AI, you know, that's been an ongoing thing as well, but it's most likely to be some kind of war, involvement with war and... I hate to say it, but really nuclear weapons, because Uranus is connected to those things.
Right. Okay.
So, I don't like being scary, but I want to be realistic here. So to prepare, well, of course, you should have a little medicine cabinet at home. You should have a storage of food, water purifiers, and probably, you know, a plan of what you should do in the case of that. But again, we can also say that this is faded because the world has become so degenerate and unnatural that there has to be some kind of destruction to reset it. And of course, that goes along with the yugas.
That kind of does raise another question, which is quite a big one, which is that, you know, those who are responsible for the ills of the world right now, who are behind the wars that are taking place and the tyranny that's occurred over the last 2.5 years, we want to assume that they have this kind of, you know, this ill intent, this kind of personal agency. But are they, do you see them more as kind of fulfilling a role which is set for them by the order of the universe, by the astrology? You know, if you know what I'm getting at is that if the astrological reading says that something negative is going to happen at this time, then obviously there needs to be a kind of visible force behind that bad thing happening. So you know, do you see the people behind things like wars and tyranny and things as being kind of almost unwitting agents of this kind of grand celestial plan?
Yes, I do. Yes. So they are, the way that we have been living our lives for a long time now has become increasingly degenerate and anti-nature. So if there are people out there, which I believe there are, which are trying to cull a lot of humanity, well, of course, they're fulfilling a role, because we know that this has happened before in terms of the yuga cycles.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, that's, yeah. And another thing that I've always been, well, I mean, when I was younger, I used to say that, you know, because when you're young and when you're a child, you like to say that certain things are your favorite things. You like to have a favorite color and a favorite tree and a favorite character from a film and things like that. And then I used to say that Saturn was my favorite planet. And, you know, I've kind of been a bit wary about that in recent years, because, you know, some people view Saturn as a negative energy. But then other people say that actually it's just, I mean, because Saturn is Kronos, you know, and some people tie it to the Germanic god Croda, I think it is, you know, the father time. So mm-hmm. What, just a very kind of basic question here, but what is Saturn?
Poor old Saturn, he has such a bad reputation. Well, I actually like Saturn because my chart is very dominated by Saturn. In astrology, Saturn represents maturity, longevity, making mature decisions, growing up, managing your money properly. So okay. if you're under quite a heavy Saturn transit, it really depends on how you have been living your life.
Right.
Okay. For example, if you've been a complete waster and you're spending all of your money and you're treating people like garbage, that Saturn transit is likely to be incredibly difficult for you, because what it's doing is setting you back on the right path and making you see the consequences of your actions. But if you're quite a, you know, organized person, then it's going to have less of a negative effect on you. But Saturn is about wisdom. I see him as the grandfather of the skies. He's waiting at home while you've been at the pub until 2 a.m. and he's watching you do your walk of shame down the path. And he's, you know, he's watching everything that you're doing. So it depends on how you live your life. But I don't see him as this negative, catastrophic force at all.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good to know. Maybe there is a reason that I was always, as a kid, I was drawn to Saturn, you know, and I have lived most of my life with this mindset that, you know, everything you do is being watched. So don't act degenerately just because no one's watching you, you know, and mm-hmm. and do act in a noble manner, even when no one's watching you, to give you praise and reward and things like that. Because even though there might not be another man or woman watching you, there is something watching you. And, you know, whether it be the gods or the ancestors, as you've put it, you know, another element to that is Saturn is this kind of watchful eye, which is kind of trying to keep you on course. And I kind of get the sense from what you're saying there that Saturn represents tough love.
Yes, tough love. That is a very good way to put it.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, that's everything I wanted to talk through. And I mean, I could honestly talk a lot more with you about all of this, but as a kind of beginner primer for people who are not familiar with astrology, I think this about does it for this episode. So like, maybe you want to just tell listeners, you know, how they can find more about you. I think you run courses, don't you? Or consultations and things like that. So if you want to kind of tell people how they can reach you, if they want to know more about your work or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. My website is fionaedgar.com. And I actually am a teacher of astrology. My courses are one-on-one. It's private tuition. I also offer readings on your birth chart. You can find out about that on my website. I am on Telegram. So I do daily astrology forecasts, almost daily, and you can get a better idea about the day ahead. So I'm also on YouTube, but if you go to my website, you can find all of my links on there.
Great. Excellent. Well, thank you for speaking with me and kind of helping to kind of guide me into this, you know, previously murky world of astrology. So I really appreciate
that. My pleasure. My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
Well, I hope those of you who've been looking for an introduction to astrology found some worth in that conversation with Fiona Adgar. I know that I certainly did. It's something that I've been keen to learn more about the basics of for a long time. So I definitely feel more enlightened on that front. For those of you who don't know, there is now Fergan merchandise available. So if you're looking for a way to support this podcast and my efforts, without simply donating some money or signing up for Subscribestar or Patreon or Substack, then if you were to consider buying a t-shirt or a zip-up hoodie, then you would be supporting what I'm doing and getting something for yourself in return. They're all going to be really high-quality items, you know, a really nice warm hoodie, good designs. It's what I do for a living. Yeah, and well-priced, I think. I was taking pre-orders, but that's now ended. If you go to fergan.com, you'll find a shop section, which has a t-shirt, Revolt Against the Modern World, in two different colours, as well as a Fergan Folk black zip-up hoodie, really nice, thick, organic hoodie, and a Greenwood Rebels long-sleeve t-shirt. So, yeah, if you're... if you'd like to support what I'm doing, that's a great way of doing it, and I'd be greatly appreciative of your custom. So to finish this episode, of course, we have the riddle from the Exeter Riddle Book. The riddle that I read last week in episode, or last fortnight, I should say, in episode number 18, was an unfinished one. So it's very, very short. I'll just reread it because it's only a few lines. I'm a strange creature. I can't speak a word, amuse men with talk, although I've a mouth, a massive paunch. And then we have a gap where there's some missing text, presumably. I was on a ship surrounded by my family. Now, I couldn't make any sense of this myself. The commentary on this says, I'll just read out the commentary. It says, these 3.5 lines are all that survive of what must have been a longer riddle. Although no loss is indicated in the manuscript, the last line appears to belong to some other riddle. One commentator, Dietrich, has volunteered leather bottle as a solution. He may be right, but it is worth noting the object in question has the same massive paunch ascribed to Bellows in riddle 37 and 87. I may have just given the game away for those future riddles there. But a leather bottle. I'm a strange creature. I can't speak a word, amuse men with talk, although I have a mouth, a massive paunch. I was on a ship surrounded by my family. So I guess that maybe suggests, bottles being shipped in the paunch. Yeah, the kind of, you know, the body of the bottle. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. Riddle number 19. Again, this one isn't printed in the main body of the book that I have, only in the kind of answer section at the end. I can't actually see a reason why, because there doesn't seem to be any missing text. But again, it's quite a short one. Yeah, it seems to be a bit obscure, this one, but I'll read it out as best I can, and maybe we can make some more sense of this one. On my way, I saw Sro, and that's just spelt S-R-O in capital letters. H, so spirited, with gleaming mane, galloping hard across the green plain. On its back it bore battle might. Nom, without a weapon rode. Ague, ranging far, fleet of foot, on its journey, it carried a keen ko. Foa, the way, the track of these travellers, was the more noble. Guess my name. Yeah, so as I said, this one's really obscure. I think we're going to have to discuss this one in a bit more length in the next episode. Initial thoughts are, I wonder if these words that are rendered all in capitals might be kind of obscure renderings of runic sounds. I'll have to look into that one more. Anyway, thank you all for listening to the Fergan podcast. As always, I really appreciate your support. Anyone who shares these episodes, comments on them, sends me messages, anything, it's all greatly appreciated. It honestly does make doing this worthwhile to have some kind of feedback and rapport with you guys. So thank you all so much, and be well until the next episode of the Fergan.